Welcome, Pewter Report readers and listeners, to another edition of the Pewter Nation podcast. This is our first off-season edition of the Pewter Nation podcast. I'm Mark Cook, along with Scott Reynolds and the man bun himself running the boards,
hello,
Mr. Trevor Sikkema.
Wait, so you're saying there's no playoffs for the Bucks this year?
No, they're getting ready. They're going to, don't they have to travel to...
Yeah, they're going to Philly, right?
Philly on Sunday.
Yeah.
3 o'clock?
No, prep it for Nick Foles.
No, that's not right.
How will this incredible Bucks pass rush go up against the Philadelphia Eagles?
I'm sorry, Trevor, we're wrong. They're facing the Saints in New Orleans on
Saturday. Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah,
so how will this fantastic Buccaneers secondary be able to cover Drew Brees?
Well, they actually beat the Saints in the last game of the season, so they can build off some confidence.
True, so
it's
not much of a troll there.
Yeah.
Why did Dirk Koetter not file physical assault charges against Sean Payton for the chest bumps and slaps?
That was the most weird, odd thing
in the world. You know, we've made it known our feelings of Dirk as a head coach and some of the deficiencies. I'd take Dirk in that fight. I think Dirk's got a little bit of mean streak and a little street fighting in him growing up in Pocahontas, Idaho, wherever
I feel
he's
like
from.
Dirk's the kind of guy who like would never say uncle, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Would just like
he would never
fight to the death, you
right.
know?
Right. So
Sean Payton's got him in a headlock, be like, I got to pass out before I give up.
And here's the thing about Sean Payton. This guy... Scott, you and I know some things about Sean Payton from some friends of ours that have covered the Saints. This guy is no choir boy.
No,
let's
he's
just
not.
Say that. I mean, this was the head coach in charge of freaking Bounty Gate.
Yeah,
right?
He's a bit of a dirty guy, but I don't think he would be a dirty street fighter. I don't think he's got.
I don't think he's got
that skill set.
I think he would tuck it and cry and be like, "Help me, security."
Yeah, I would like Dirk in that fight. I would definitely take Dirk because I think coming off of two things. Number one, a very disappointing season where he's been under pressure the entire season. He's like a steam engine ready to just blow and combust. So you have that. Then you have the confidence of, I just kicked your team's ass.
Right. You want some of
this
now?
You want some of this? Exactly. Yeah, let's just finish this.
Right.
The players have settled it on the field. Now it's time for the coaches, right?
And if that doesn't work, Jameis versus Brees. I'll take Jameis all day.
I'll take Jameis as well. The other thing, too, though, is – and I take Mike Evans versus Marshawn
Lattimore.
Anybody
on that team, yes.
Yeah. But the other thing, too, is you have home field advantage because you still have – there's still maybe 10,000 fans in the stands.
True.
Oh,
right?
I would have came right out of the press box.
Yeah.
If there was a melee on the field, I would have been the first one to jump over the fence and get out there and get in it. And
I actually don't doubt that to be true.
I would actually look for Jude first.
Jude IJ Barima. Yeah. So you would knock out Jude on your way to helping Dirk knock out Sean Payton.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Man, that could have been like the moment that like you and Jude come together for like the, you know, to
it's
whoop
true.
Up
that's
to
right.
whoop up on some Saints, you know, video guy that's sitting on the sideline.
It would be like an Anchorman
guy
fight.
You're gonna take.
Right.
Because then I'd be like, where's Joe Buck's fan? Where's Rick Stroud? Where's Roy Cummings?
Yeah.
You know, it would be
touching of the hair or face.
That's true.
And that's it.
That's true. Trevor would kill someone with a trident.
Yeah. We would be like the PR news team coming out there to kick some ass in the field. And actually, we could just take it to, you know, Bucks beat writers versus Saints beat writers from there.
That's true.
You know, I didn't really size up the competition.
Right.
But, I mean, you know, when you got us, you know, the Times, Joe Bucks fan, whoever, I think all of us could unite and lay an ass whipping to start the new year on the Saints beat writers. I mean, I may be talking out of turn. I might be just, you know, regretting these comments of if their beat writers are like 6'5", 300 or something.
All their beat writers are former NFL players.
Yeah. Okay. Then I take all that back.
Yeah. Well, anyway, our money is on Dirk, and we'll talk about where we put our money a little bit later in this show. But don't think that's a betting line. But if it was, my money would definitely be on Dirk on mybookie.ag. Well, guys, you know, we talked about coaching changes, what was going to happen. We talked about John Gruden potentially coming. We never said he was definitely coming to Tampa Bay. Scott, from the very get-go at the end of July, your message was John Gruden is going to coach again in the NFL. Not college, in the NFL. And we thought it would probably happen here, particularly with a 5-11 football team, but it didn't. But it did happen. And, you know, a lot of people said, oh, he'll never leave the booth. He'll never coach again.
Mm-hmm. Over McFarlane.
On Tuesday, John Gruden had a press conference in Oakland. And as our good friend Skip said, or as he's known on the message boards, Hate, He texted me yesterday and said it was like seeing his ex-wife with his girlfriend her new boyfriend for the first time. It didn't sit well with him.
Well, especially with both the Buccaneers and the Raiders, two teams that were on the rise last year, and the Raiders made the playoffs. The Bucs didn't. They missed it by a game.
Because of
Jude I.J. Brema in the Oakland Raiders game.
It wasn't Jude's fault.
That led to overtime.
Yep, you're right.
It wasn't Trevor's fault.
Holding away from the play is not his fault. Right.
Go ahead. Don't take this, Jude.
But
fire back on social media.
Please. So you've got a situation here where both of John's beloved teams, the Raiders and the Buccaneers, now are in need of his services. We know for a fact that there was interest from the Buccaneers, and there was interest in John with the Buccaneers listening to what they had to say. It just didn't take hold, and the reason for that, I think the biggest reason is just the commitment. It's the we kind of caught wind of this. Trevor, not in a meeting with John, but just later on getting wind of the fact that, if John were to come back, it would have to be somewhere in the neighborhood. And we even tweeted it out beforehand, a 10-year contract.
You tweeted this back in July, you know, when we were kind of getting the story and everything. But you're right. I mean, more recently, in the last month or so.
$10 million a year for 10 years.
We were kind of told that was going to be the target. And
it happened.
I'm sure that John's camp was the ones to initially say, hey, this is what we're looking for.
Right.
You know, with two teams on the hook. And I tweeted this out when it happened. I was like, he signed with the Raiders because the Raiders are the only team that were ever, ever, ever going to do that deal.
Correct.
And so I'm pretty sure that John and his people went to both the Buccaneers and the Raiders and said, look, 10 years, $10 million each year. It's a $100 million contract. And
guaranteed.
The Bucs probably said, no.
Correct.
And the Raiders went, okay. And I'm sure that have John ever, and his camp were kind of snickering in the background they did it. They said yes to the deal.
Yeah.
Because it's absurd.
I think we've all been in a negotiation with somebody or flirted with a situation where we say, you know what, let's just throw this outrageous price out there. Maybe you're buying a car and you're like, it's $30,000 car. I'll offer you $20,000.
Right?
And all of a sudden they say okay. And you're like, oh,
because
I guess I'm going to buy this car now.
That's what I'm wondering. Like, we were told that this was kind of the number that he was going to shoot. Do you think he shot higher than this initially?
No, I think he got exactly what he wanted.
Was the high number.
So you think that the Raiders were silly enough to take the first number that came out of his mouth?
Yes.
Because we've known this.
Yes.
You and I have known this for months.
Yes.
That this is what he was going to shoot for.
And
so they said yes?
Yeah, because Mark Davis, and Mark even admitted this in the press conference, he has been pursuing John Gruden every single year probably since his father's passing.
I mean, he's probably, I mean,
and I mean, we know for a fact that John Gruden was offered the Raiders job before Jack Del Rio.
Yes, he was.
And also one time prior to that.
Yeah.
And that there was some thought, some consideration. And so I think John always knew that these are the two franchises he would like to come back to, the Raiders or the Buccaneers.
I mean, let's face it, both franchises have wished he was still their head coach since he left each, right?
Correct.
I mean, both have had terrible head coaching hires since.
And I want to believe, and I've kind of got this from some sources that say that with John, it's almost like John's biggest curse coming here is winning the Super Bowl the first year. It's like being that band where your first single is your biggest smash and you're always trying to live up to that.
Milli Vanilli.
Exactly.
But blame it on the rain.
Yes, but unlike Milli Vanilli, John was not really a one-hit wonder. He also won a couple of division titles here and took the team
to
the playoffs.
But see, those were kind of minor hits. Those were top 10 hits, but they weren't number one.
Exactly. And so you're always chasing that. So if John were to come back here, and keep in mind, the goal of all 32 NFL head coaches is to win the Super Bowl. I got that. But if John were to come here, the expectation would be, you're going to take us to another Super Bowl. And where in Oakland, if he finishes his 10-year run out there, or 7 years, or 12 years, however long he's out there in the Raiders organization, because it will be Las Vegas soon, if all he ever does is take the Raiders to the playoffs, his image can't be tarnished, because that's what he was beforehand.
Sure,
we built this team, it's really good, we made the playoffs, got to a division title game or two, but we didn't really get over the hump. Here, if this team doesn't win another Super Bowl, then I think his reputation here is tarnished.
The
a bit.
Man has a statue. I know in the he lobby.
Does, and his, and you're his right. name is and, up and in right. the Ring of Honor.
You're right, and it's like he had a successful marriage that ended up ending divorce. And I used this analogy a long time ago when people were asking me about John coming back here and how it would work out. Look, I think we've all probably dated girls, broke up with them, and got back with them 6 months later, and it just wasn't the same. I wonder if that worried John a little bit, too.
Yeah.
With the Raiders, it was a situation where he was traded. They didn't necessarily want to get rid of him. He didn't fall short of expectations there.
It was a pissing contest between him and Al Davis.
About money. About the contract.
Right.
Because at
Which
the time,
is really funny now that he's being paid the most lucrative contract of all time for a
Al
head
Davis
coach.
Just rolled over in his grave, though, when his son
No, actually, I think Al Davis is pretty happy because now he finally beat the Buccaneers.
Yeah.
Right? He beat revenge. The Buccaneers. He got revenge. He got John Gruden back. Now,
check the trophy case, Al.
Well, technically, they have more trophies out there in Oakland.
It doesn't matter. I'm just
but
saying,
not recently. But, yeah. But the one thing, too, though, is one of the X factors is here you have the people that fired John Gruden, Joe Glazer, Brian Glazer, Ed Glazer, still there.
Right.
Al Davis, the one who traded John, is now passed.
Right.
And it's his son,
right.
Mark, who's running the operations. Mark did not fire, trade, do any of that stuff to John Gruden. Matter of fact, those guys were pretty close because of John being the coach, Al, you know, being the owner, and Mark being his son, part of the organization. John and Mark have always been friends. They've always been friendly. There's always been that mutual respect and admiration. So it just seemed like a better fit personally, I think, for John in all these situations. When you talk about legacy, money, stability, all those things. And for Mark Davis, what a coup, because your franchise is going to transition to Las Vegas. You're going to need a bright, shiny light out there on Sunset Strip.
They must have
not
thought
Not Sunset
that,
Strip, the Las Vegas Strip.
They must have thought they had to do it, you know, and this is the reason why. You know,
there's got
to
be a draw.
When you move a team.
But they're 4 years away from playing in Las Vegas. 2021, I believe, is when they're set to start in Las Vegas. Is that right?
They're not going to play in a soccer stadium like the Chargers?
2020?
Yeah.
I mean, if this team goes 4-12 and 6-10 over the next 2 years, I don't know if that's a shining star.
It's
you
true.
Know what I mean? And it's there's true. No
I don't
guarantee.
Think the Raiders are. I think the Raiders are a better team than the Buccaneers right now, in my opinion, in terms of talent.
Are you trying to tell me Donald Penn is better than our guy?
I'm trying to tell you that Khalil Mack is better than any pass rusher in the Buccaneers.
Please. No, that's we have Ryan Russell.
Sure. Somebody didn't want Will Clark take a shot the last half of the year.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
Yeah.
No, okay. So, all right. So we can put the Gruden talk to rest, I guess. It's over. Raiders win that battle,
Here's one interesting thing to consider, though.
What if the Bucs trade for John Gruden next year?
Hey, you know?
Trade.
No. Hey, look, no. Could happen.
This is not going to happen.
Two number ones, two number twos,
$8
million.
Honestly, if the Buccaneers are going to trade for a coach, trade for Bill Belichick, right? You have to one-up.
Do you believe that? Do you believe the stuff that's going on out there? Do you believe it?
Kinda.
I'll say
bit.
This.
I
How
do.
In the hell
I do.
Does that happen? You've got the most prolific NFL franchise over the last 20 years. Things are humming.
Because
you
it's
can't
going
do anything
to end
but win.
Soon. It's
going to
end soon.
Right.
There's going to come a year. It's next year. Maybe it's later in the playoffs this year. It's going to be 2 years from now, whenever. There's going to come a point in time, and I saw it in Kansas City, when Joe Montana arrived from the 49ers, he led the Chiefs to the playoffs. He was not really a shell of his former self at that time, but he was not the Joe Montana that won the Super Bowl a couple times with the 49ers.
Mm-hmm.
But a year or two after that, he just fell off the face of the earth from a talent standpoint. It happens. The arm just noodles out. We saw it with Peyton Manning in the last Super Bowl run for the Broncos.
And we've seen that with your and I's riding as well. It's just really tailed off the last few years.
It has.
We've gotten to our 40s.
Yeah, it has.
That's why we brought Trevor aboard, thank God.
Well, that's why we have to resort to PED. We've got to get performance-enhancing drugs like Monster energy drinks.
Sure.
Fiber energies, espresso coffee, double shots, things like that.
I'm hanging with Daquan Bowers. He's been giving me some stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Who was the fullback a couple years ago, too, that got popped? I can't remember his name. The real big guy.
Played at Wisconsin, didn't he?
How terrible are we that we see, this is what happens when you turn over 40, Scott. I mean, Trevor, you forget who you're talking to, and you forget who the guy is.
Yeah.
Really big fullback, but he got popped. It was the same year that Daquan got popped, too, and got suspended. But anyway, Jaworski Lane.
There you go. Was that it?
Yeah.
That's the only fullback I can remember other than
You forgot Lorenzo Neal?
Yes.
Stud.
Yeah, he was a stud.
Anyway, all right. So John Gruden's over with. He's with the Raiders now. Now we're going to Scott said one more thing.
I'm just going to say this. So if you're the Buccaneers and you've gotten out of the Gruden sweepstakes and you're going to keep Dirk and this staff for one more year, which I've already gone on record as saying is crazy because there has been no accountability for an awful season. And you can injuries are only a factor so much. I mean, I understand that maybe Jay Hayes didn't have a lot to work with, but he and Mike Smith have got to get together and say, hey, listen, we don't have guys that can get to the quarterback on a regular basis. You're going to have to blitz the linebackers and take our chances. And, of course, John Hogan is probably talking with Mike Smith saying, you can't leave our corners out to dry. We can't be in man coverage all the time with Ryan Smith on one side. And here I've got Vernon Hargraves, whose confidence is in the toilet. And I got Brent Grimes, who's banged up. You can't do that, you know, to my secondary. But the problem is Levante David, zero sacks this year. Quan Alexander, zero sacks this year. And the reason why the Buccaneers went on that run, and Trevor, I think you'll agree with this, mm-hmm. is they were aggressive blitzing the A-gap with Quan and with Levante. Mm-hmm. Levante had five sacks last year. Quan, I believe, had two or three. I'm not last year, but in 2016. Year before. And that was a catalyst for the Bucs getting some interceptions, for them actually having a pass rush. And so I don't see a whole bunch changing. There's not really the answer out there for this pass rush in free agency or even in the draft. You can't count on a rookie to be Joey Bosa and get 9 or 10 sacks as a rookie.
9.5. Yeah. Still no rookie has gotten 10 sacks, I believe, since 2011 with Alden Smith, if I'm not mistaken. I think that's an amazing stat. I mean, people think,
it's
draft
hard
Bradley
to come
Chubb.
In. 10 sacks is a lot of it sacks, is. Man.
Yeah, right. I mean, this franchise hasn't had a 10-sack guy since Simeon Rice left in 2006?
It was 1994.
No, wasn't that far along?
Well, yeah. It seems like it.
So if John Gruden is out, which he is, he's in Oakland.
Yeah.
What does the landscape look like? Let's say Dirk, and we'll get into what we think is going to happen with the season in terms of the record for next year, but what happens if we see a repeat performance by this repeat staff and this team goes 5-11, 6-10, 7-9, and it's not good enough?
I mean, everyone,
who's out there on the horizon?
Yeah, I don't know. Are you talking about like after next year?
Yes.
I mean, it's a little early because, I mean, you see guys pop up at a places here and there, and there are a couple coordinator names who might not get head coach jobs this time around or might just like...
But it's all a crapshoot, right? You know what I'm saying?
You mean like predicting who's going to come available?
Yes.
Or if they're
sure.
going to be successful,
right.
too.
You have to come up with some names. All of these NFL insiders, the Adam Schefters and the Jade Lasers and stuff, they were saying there could be as many as 12 head coaching vacancies on Black Monday this year. Of course, we saw the Giants got rid of McAdoo earlier in the year.
Right.
But they were
Bob
talking
or Ben.
Both. They got rid of both of them.
That's true.
So it was either 11, 10, 12, somewhere like that. But then you see the Bucs are keeping Dirk Cutter. The Jets are going to keep Todd Bowles.
The Bengals are going to keep Marvin Lewis.
Exactly. Because the devil that you know is better than the devil that you don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, look, I think if this was
not
Dirk's
if you're the Bengals
fourth or fifth year, if you're the
not
Bengals,
if you're the Bengals, it's not. At that point, it's just the devil.
If you're, you know, if this was Dirk's fourth or fifth year, then 5-12 gets him fired. So, you know, I think the Glazers have heard the anger from some Bucks fans and even from some national people talking about the constant 2 years and you're done kind of a deal. So maybe that played a little bit into it. But there's no doubt. I mean, who else was going to be out there? Who was the next Kyle Shanahan or McVay or one of these guys, you know, assistants that are going to come in and turn things around. You know, I think when you looked across the landscape, like you say, Scott, there just wasn't anybody that really stood out. And, you know, maybe you can talk about the assistants up in New England, as you did mention, as a potential replacement for Dirk a few weeks ago in your fab. But, again, I mean, Josh McDaniels had a shot in Denver and flamed out quickly there. He was only like 30. He was too young and wasn't ready to be a head coach.
To be Maybe fair, they drafted him Tebow, but
yeah, and he still screwed that up. I mean, how do you screw that up?
Most guaranteed prospect of all time.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think too that even though I believe that there should have been somebody to fall on the sword, I mean, I was not impressed at all with what Mike Smith did last year in terms of the game planning. And you could look at the Atlanta Falcons game, both of them. The first game, he couldn't stop Julio Jones. The second game, he couldn't stop the toss sweep on the outside. Mm-hmm. And despite 14 different defenses or whatever, the job didn't get done. Now, I will say the Bucs defense did play better down the stretch than it did earlier in the year when they were giving up 30 points
defense
a game on the
so
road.
Hot and cold, man. I don't even know. Like people looked at the defense last year and they said, wow, this defense is really coming like together. Like, this is the
exactly.
thing. Like, this is what's going to happen.
Especially
and then
because
this year,
of the third down
like,
success.
Yeah, and this year was just like the complete opposite. Like, they continued to give up a crap ton of yards. They sucked on third downs. They gave up touchdowns instead of field goals at times.
22 sacks.
They choked away games at the very end instead of last year where they were clutch. So, like, defense is such a freaking crapshoot to me. So
that's the difference, though, in this team winning and losing. Again, Scott, going back to one of your fabs here recently, talking about the defense of the New England Patriots. You know, it's scoring defense, keeping teams out of the end zone. It doesn't matter how many yards you give up if you can.
Right.
If,
like,
if you can,
don't have
if
a
you
good
can
defense.
Do what opposing defenses did to this Buccaneer team. Okay, they get in the red zone, make them get three instead of seven. You're going to win a lot of football games. Yeah. But this year, the Buccaneers defense just wasn't able to do that.
The Patriots
at all.
Also give up a crap ton of yards. So do the Buccaneers. But the difference is, Bucs can't make up for it by scoring touchdowns themselves.
Yeah.
You know,
and one of the names I threw out there just as speculation would be Jack Del Rio, just because of there's some familiarity. He and Dirk worked together, just like Mike Smith and Dirk worked together in a couple stops. Jack Del Rio was the head coach when Dirk was the offensive coordinator in Jacksonville. But the problem is, if you bring Del Rio in, I think that's threatening to Dirk, because if the defense
was a head coach.
Well, yeah, and if he plays, if the defense does well and rebounds, but this is still a 7-9 football team, they might decide to do to Dirk what they did to Lovie Smith, which was, well, let's take the hot coordinator we have in house, which is Dirk Cutter, replace Lovie Smith with him. Let's take Jack Del Rio and replace Dirk with him.
I don't think it really matters for Dirk at this point. I think Dirk knows that he's on the hot seat no matter what.
So I think they should have replaced
who coordinator
Dirk this
is
year
if
with
he
Todd
make the
Monken
playoffs.
Myself.
Yeah, I mean,
that's the hot coordinator.
Todd Monken is head coach.
He's my favorite assistant coach.
Okay. That's good to know.
Probably wasn't going to happen. No. Todd, I thought Todd might get a look at some college jobs, and he still may next year.
Yeah, I think he's going to get a head coach of a college job next year.
Yeah,
I do.
I think he would be good at it. All right. Real quick, let's talk a little bit about some of the content we've had this week. There were some different articles that came out. First of all, Trevor, your cover three, Fixing the Buccaneers Run Game, was very good. And the Sony Shake, again, one of your better cover threes.
Appreciate
it. And it came out on a Tuesday, too, Scott. That was pretty impressive.
It did. And I was...
Like noon.
I haven't even read it yet because I was expecting it on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Boss didn't even read my stuff.
Yeah, I'm going to, though.
Yeah,
no,
it was really good.
It was the first part of it, you know, fixing the Bucs run game. I kind of talk about it a little bit, or I go into detail with some numbers and situational statistics of things that I've brought up throughout the year, and that, like, the Bucs, they tell us, oh, we like all our guys, you know, like, we like all our running backs. And to me, it's like, okay, that's fine. Don't play all of them.
Right.
This is the NFL. You only, how many offensive snaps do you get? How many offensive running snaps do you get?
Yeah.
And you're going to divvy it up four ways? Come on. And so the thing that bothered me the most about the Bucs rushing attack wasn't even the talent. Like, I don't even have that big of a gripe against Doug Martin. Look, the offensive line kind of let him down quite a bit this year. Don't get me wrong. I say in the article, he's not worth the fourth highest running back contract in the NFL.
Exactly.
So at that point, you move on. But I didn't even hate the running back talent on this team. I thought the running back talent was fine. But when you always play Charles Sims on third down no matter what, no matter how long the down and distance is, and you know you're not going to hand it off to him,
yep.
Then at that point, you just become predictable. If you already know what's going to happen when Peyton Barber comes in the game, you're predictable. If you know what's going to happen when Doug Martin comes into the game in the third series of the game, because you know, oh, look, this team's rotating running backs. You know what first down's probably going to be? Let's see what Doug Martin's got this game, because you're playing such a predictable running back by rotation kind of a thing, and it's so deep, you already know as a defense when they're going to try to get these other running backs involved, because they're going to go, okay, well, we're going to take the first half.
Right.
To figure out who the hot hand is.
Yep. Which is dumb.
You're going to give up a whole first half of a football game, an NFL football game, to figure out who your best running back is?
Well, here's
the
thing.
Get out of here.
We've talked about this before, but it really bears mentioning again on the heels of this season finale against the Saints. There was no Doug Martin available because he had a concussion, and so you saw nothing but Peyton Barber against the Packers. He played the entire game. He didn't get tired. He didn't get hurt. He almost won them the game. He had over 100 yards, something Doug Martin hasn't done in well over two calendar years. So what happens in the Saints game in the season finale?
Mayan calendar years or like just regular Christian calendar years?
Maybe like an Inca, Mayan situation.
Regardless, it's been like 900 days.
Many, many moons ago.
Many moons.
Yeah. Oh, so now we're going to go with Indian calendar.
We're going to bring it all. We're a multi-inclusive podcast. So when you look at what Peyton was able to do then, and then in the Saints game, I believe he was averaging 3.9 yards per carry. He had 10 carries for 39 yards, and then they put Doug Martin in for three plays, and then he got minus 3 yards on those three plays. And I even tweeted that out. I'm like, why are you even playing this guy?
Right.
What is the point? I mean, he has not rushed for more than 500 yards in four of the last five seasons. He doesn't deserve any carries. Right. Then he gets in, and you have the Doug Martin faithful on Twitter, you know, cracking back at us saying, you know, well, the offensive line is not blocking for him. No. The offensive line is blocking just fine because Peyton Barber on 10 carries before was averaging 3.9 yards per carry.
But
some of this is Doug Martin's fault, and that's the reason why he's not getting the carries.
And that's the reason why
he shouldn't be on this football team anymore.
I'll even throw in there that it is situational. You know, blocking can be different on every, and sometimes, you know, Doug can get unlucky on things, and, you know, eventually when you have a larger sample size, you can count out luck a little bit on that. But like I said, I don't even hate Doug Martin as much, but...
It is the predictability, Trevor. It's the because this is what happens. If you're a Dirt Cutter, well, we want to get Doug some carries. What does Doug do well? We're going to do the runs that Doug does well. We're
going to put him
in those situations
to succeed.
So when Doug
Martin comes in the third series of the game and he's in I formation, guess where the defense goes? Hey, they're running the ball. Oh, wow, he ran the ball and it didn't work because they overload the offensive line because we already know that you're going to hand him off the ball because you're playing. Other teams know.
They watch film and they sit there and say, when Doug's in the game out of this formation, this is what they do, and then they game plan to stop it.
And so you should have two running backs that you play.
All the time.
Two running backs. Two. Don't play three.
In any situation.
Don't play four. Play two. Draft well, sign well, build your roster, and trust the dang people that are at the top of the depth chart.
Agreed.
That is something that I thought, and you know, just going back to the point where we're talking about, do you get rid of a coach early, within 2 years or whatever, blah, blah, blah. It's all about whether you still believe in the person, okay? The record can be what it is. The NFL is a wacky game. You can win, lose games, get unlucky here and there, year to year. But it's about whether you still believe in the guy. And my confidence in Dirk Cutter was shaken because he didn't even trust the best guys on the top of his depth chart this year. It took him forever to finally give Peyton Barber the starting role as the running back when he was clearly the guy. It took forever for Chris Godwin to actually get into the game plan when even as far back as the Miami game, I remember who was making the catches on the final drive of the game for them to kick the field goal. Chris Godwin.
Right.
He made the two biggest catches. This guy's making the most clutch catches for you during the entire game, and you barely even play him.
That's right.
That's the thing about Dirk Cutter for me, and that's the thing about the running game.
And there's
you have to build it and have confidence in it, and it's just that they don't. I don't know why.
There's a couple games, too, where O.J. Howard didn't even get any targets.
Right.
That's just mind-boggling.
And sometimes even Cameron Brate.
Yeah.
Like, no, it's just – and I get it. There's only one ball. There's only so many offensive snaps, blah, blah, blah. But if you make your – if you make the rotation of guys that you want to, quote-unquote, get in the game, this elongated thing, then all of a sudden you have games where, wow, Cameron Brate only got one target. Wow, Peyton Barber only got eight carries. And it's just like you have to make sure that your best players – are getting the ball.
Well,
it's on you.
The Buccaneers are behind personnel-wise right now in the belief, and I don't know if it's Dirk-driven or Jason-driven or if it's both of their minds, you know, alike or different in the situation, but the days of having, well, we're going to have a first and second down back, and we're going to have a pass-catching third down back, and we're going to have a big short yardage goal line back, those days are gone and over. And there's a reason why the New Orleans Saints are in the playoffs and doing well. It's because they have two guys that can do all of that. Alvin Kamara.
And Aaron Stecker.
No, not anymore.
Do some cows.
Forgot.
Yeah, not anymore.
Hoki Gajon.
Wow. You win
that one.
Thank you.
Nice. But
Adrian, sorry.
And some of the guys that we've previewed, and I've talked about in the Fab Five, Sony Michel, Rashad Penny, those are guys that can do that. And really, and Saquon Barkley,
sure.
That is the future of the NFL. It's not the the situational backs. It's backs that can do everything. It's David Johnson in this league. And it's players that can play first, second, or third down. And if you have two guys...
They can play first, second, and third down.
Exactly. Then you take away predictability and tendencies.
That is something that
That's what Tampa Bay has to get to.
That's something that I bring up at the end of the first page of the Fab Five, where I actually bring
cover
up...
Cover three? Are you writing the Fab
Five
now?
Yeah.
You can if you want. I've got one due Friday.
No.
It'll free up a lot of my schedule between now and then.
No, I'm not going to do that.
Damn it.
But anyways, I look at the top five offenses in the NFL, and I believe it was the Patriots, the Rams, the Chiefs, the Steelers, and one other team I can't remember. The Saints.
He's talking about, now you know what it's like, Trevor. You sitting there not knowing what you're talking about.
So those are
Uncle Stan.
Those are the...
Go drink your coffee. We know it's early.
Those are the top five scoring offenses in the NFL, okay? Not coincidentally... All five of them are also in the top eight in terms of passing yards and passing per game. Okay, it's a passing league.
Yep.
But you know who else is in the top eight? Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Mm-hmm.
You know what the difference was? Four out of those five teams that I named were also in the top 10 in running back efficiency. Now, I'm not talking about carries per game or even yards per game. I'm talking about averages. How many times you get the running back the ball in the right situations where they're not just set up to... fail. The Bucs were, I think, 27th in that category.
Sounds right.
And the only team out of that top scoring bunch that I named that wasn't in the top 10 was the Steelers, and they were like 18th, and they have Le'Veon Bell, who they use in a variety of different ways, not necessarily just running the ball.
Yeah.
So that's the thing, is that going back to just what we said here, you have to simplify your depth chart, more importantly, simplify your running rotation, and get two guys on your team who could play on any down. Because at that point, you become diverse. You can disguise what you're doing. Play action works a lot better. Running the ball works a lot better. Passing it to the running back works a lot better.
And you know what? If you have an injury, if one of those two backs, either the backup or the starter, gets hurt, and you have to go for a couple weeks with one guy as a feature back,
sure,
you don't have to change your offense.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
And so there's a lot of sense and truth to that. I just hope that the powers that be upstairs, as we're here at One Buck in Your Place recording this podcast, understand that. And that this, the NFL is an always evolving beast. And to find running backs, and that's why I tweeted this out as I'm watching Georgia completely, you know, screw the end of that game up by not giving Sony Michel their best offensive weapon, like one touch in the last three series.
She played well in that game.
No, it's not a she. It's a he. Sony Michel is a guy.
I'm going to tell him that. Okay. You said that.
Yeah, I hope he gets drafted here, and Trevor's going to play this little snippet, and you're going to be on his crap list the minute he walks in the door.
I think the Alabama players weren't saying the same thing. She.
Well, he's the guy that won – the Rose Bowl for
no doubt
the Georgia Bulldogs. And I believe that he is going to be a much better NFL prospect, and I think he's going to get drafted higher than Nick Chubb, who has limitations as a pass catcher out of the backfield.
Both those guys give me a Chubb. I like both of them.
And Bradley Chubb, too?
Definitely. There's a lot of Chubbs going on in this room right now.
Speaking
of Chubbs, my favorite thing that Trevor wrote in the thing about
bring up a Happy Gilmore reference. Speaking of Chubbs,
my favorite thing that you wrote in the cover three when you're talking about the Doug Martin situation is what he should do next year, and that is to ride his motorized skateboard instead of running next year.
I didn't say that.
No.
Although I mean that would be cool.
I mean, it would be cool. Remember that from Hard Knocks?
Yeah, no.
I don't know why that stands out about everything in Hard Knocks. Doug riding a motorized skateboard around his neighborhood just stands out. But
that and Baker humping the tree.
Those two things are very good. Yeah, yeah, that's true. But I would like to see Doug ride his motorized skateboard. Less wear and tear on his legs.
You know what? Looking back now, I don't think Hard Knocks had anything to do with the record that this team had. But what I saw during Hard Knocks and how almost nonchalant this team was during training camp and all that stuff.
I'm going to miss Hard Knocks.
I'm not.
Hard Knocks is cool. That was my first training camp, so like that's all I know.
Well, that's true. From a nostalgia standpoint, I get that. But what I'm saying is it just – I don't think that this team takes football as seriously as they need to. And you guys were up in Jacksonville, right? And we've talked before about how Doug Marrone made those guys run sprints after practice, where the Buccaneers were like, hey, we're done. We came up here, we kicked your ass, you know, in practice.
Complaining about the heat, how hot it was. Yeah. Oh, I can't wait to get back in the air conditioning.
Hot.
It was hot. And but these guys are out there literally running sideline to sideline gassers. Yeah. And old school, if somebody jumped off sides just like we did in youth football, that's Scott, right. Back it up 5 yards.
Yep.
You know, and the guys were cursing, you know, just like the little league kids would
it
be
builds
like,
"Dang accountability, it builds mental toughness, and I don't think the Buccaneers are a very mentally tough football team. I really don't. And I think their record bears that out.
What are you coughing into the mic? You got
sorry.
A button for that.
We're, no, we don't
you got
have
a button.
Button
for that.
No,
we
I need to turn my
that.
Head. We
Let's
could
put
use
that in
a
the
button.
Budget.
All right, wrapping up the podcast right now.
Cough on it that's not attached to anything.
Yes,
just like
yeah. Oh, most of those radio buttons don't work. The cough buttons.
Oh, the cough buttons.
Yeah, yeah, it's just fake. I don't think they're ever even connected. But anyway, the ones at 620 are because I've had to use those before. But anyway,
how about the mock draft? You guys like the mock we put out? Quentin
yeah,
Nelson to start with.
I mean, Quentin Nelson. Yeah. Quentin Nelson and Sony, and then Carter, right?
Yeah.
Were those first three?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not terribly hot on Lorenzo Carter. I mean,
ooh, he's fast, though.
He is. He looks the part. It just, he has not been that dedicated every down pass rusher. You know, that's more of a projection based upon what he brings athletically to the table. It's mm-hmm. not like he hasn't rushed the
well,
passer.
I mean, that's why he'd be a third down or a third round guy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're good at pass rushing, it vaults you immediately. We've seen right. that before. So, I mean, I'd take a chance on him in the third round.
Yeah.
I didn't mind it.
Look. I would not. I would love nothing more than see this team draft 7 defensive ends. I would be completely.
Yeah,
okay
I mean
that's
the
that.
Thing. I like the mock, but only if they sign people in free agency.
Definitely,
you know,
definitely.
Sure.
Yeah, they've got to go guns a blazing in free agency and at least try. I mean, if your hit rate's going to be 30%, then you got to sign 6. You got to spend some money this year and sign 6 guys, hoping that 2 really make.
They
got
to clear some cap, don't they?
I think that's going to be easy to do. Well, I mean, the Bucks are in good cap situation right now.
Yeah, it's
but
true
if you get
are.
Rid of
Doug and Baker,
and Chris
right?
Baker, Robert Ayers, that's a good chunk of change right there just with those three. I mean, that's a lot of money coming off the books.
Yeah. But, I mean, they do have Evans and Winston coming up.
They do.
And pretty soon, so.
Yeah.
But they already know that. They're in good cap, like you said.
Now, coming up, we'll be East-West Shrine Game next week.
Yeah.
Senior
Excited.
Bowl, Pro Bowl, maybe, if Gerald ends up going. That's the game plan right now. So, you know, look, people say, oh, it's the off-season now, but really is no off-season because as soon as the All-Star games get over with, then we start taking a look at free agency in the month of February. And then right out of the gate in March, free agency begins. And then the following month, you've got the NFL draft. Then you've got OTAs and minicamps. So yep. There's a lot to look forward to, Peter Report hey, readers. Keep coming back often.
This team has got a lot of work to do this offseason because we just came out with our Peter Players Awards. Mm-hmm. We had the MVPs come out the other day. The Peter Player Awards, we said that the Buccaneers were gonna be 6-10 next year. That's yeah. the early prediction. And as of right now, if you look at the schedule, you know, we don't see them beating – it's not to say that they can't, because on any given Sunday, something can happen, an upset can happen. But when you're looking at the Eagles, the Cowboys, the Redskins, and the Giants, they're playing the NFC East. They're going to be lucky to go 1-3, I believe, in that mix. And you look at the Browns, the Bengals, the Ravens, the Steelers, you know, the Baltimore Ravens and the Bengals games are on the road. Those are teams that are better than the Buccaneers and had better records this year. The Steelers coming to Tampa Bay, I don't see the Bucs winning that game.
And it's 50-50 with the Browns.
And it really is, because I tell you what, Buck luck.
God, I hope not.
Long time Buck, you know, faithful, long-suffering fans know there is a thing called Buck luck.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Tennessee Titans, Marcus Mariota, coming down here to, yep. to place Jameis Winston and the Bucks in week one in 2015. And, you know, Jameis Winston throws a pick six on his first pass, and Mariota ends the day with 4 touchdowns. And it turns out that the Buccaneers were not Tennessee ready under Lovie Smith. So if the Buccaneers start the season at home against the Browns, Buck luck in the tradition, in that awful sense, would say that the Browns get their first win of the year and beat the Buccaneers here. Now, I'm not going to pick the Browns to beat the Buccaneers, but I'm just saying that's the type of Murphy's
Law.
Would
you put some money on the Browns, Scott, if you were a gambling man?
I would be, but since our contract with mybookie.ag has expired for this season because it was an in-season only. I'm not going to go to mybookie.ag and place any more bets.
Okay, all right, that's fine.
Until we get compensated by mybookie.ag.
I wish I would have known this before the podcast started.
No worries. They're going to get the bonus mention.
Why are we all talking like TJ Reeves right now? Anyway. All right, guys. Appreciate the us getting together for another podcast. We'll have another one next week. Real quick, just wanted to let everybody know I appreciate everybody who reached out this week. Tough situation losing my mom, but anyway, appreciate it. One quick story. Louis Grizzard wrote a book after his mother passed away, and he relayed a story.
Who's Louis Grizzard for those not from the South?
The greatest columnist in the history of the world, former of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Chicago Sun-Times, and came back to Atlanta. Was a sports guy, turned into a columnist, but Bear Bryant was doing a Mother's Day TV commercial for Pacific Bell, and as he was doing the commercial, he ad-libbed at the very end, and he said, don't forget to call your mama, I wish I could call mine, and that's kind of fitting here, so I'm trying to keep it together. Anyway, call your mama, hug their necks, love them, I appreciate it. All you guys that have reached out, it's meant the world to me. We will be back next week with another edition of the Pewter Nation Podcast.
If I leave you, it doesn't mean I love you any less. Keep me in your heart for a while. When you get up in the morning and you see that crazy sun, keep me in your heart for a while. There's a train leaving nightly called when all is said and done. Keep me in your heart for a while. Sha-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Keep me in your heart for a while. Sometimes when you're doing simple things around the house, maybe you'll think of me and smile. You know I'm tied to you like the buttons on your blouse. Keep me in your heart for a while. Hold me in your thoughts. Take me to your dreams. Touch me as I'm falling. And I will be right next to you. Engine drivers headed north to Pleasant Stream. Keep me in your heart for a while. These wheels keep turning, but they're running out of steam. Keep me in your heart for a while. Sha-la. Sha-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Keep me in your heart for a while.